This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, welcome back to the 45th. Listeners, Rabia here, and this week I have our dear old friend, Wajahat Ali. Hey, Waj, welcome back to the show.
Hey,
let me just give you some news. So we're recording this, it's Tuesday afternoon, to the 18th, I think, or whatever, but I have been Twitter banned since last night, and I don't know exactly what's going on in the world with Trump, but up until last night, we still had enough to talk about, to fill out a couple hours. So do you want to start off with the new stuff, or like, should we just go through what we've got?
First of all, why are you Twitter banned? Is it like, censorship? Is it?
Absolutely not. No, Twitter, fuck the man is what I have to say. Twitter banned me. Apparently I tweeted, I can't remember. I honestly don't remember. There was somebody on some news show, probably a Fox show, where this guy, in response to one of the stories we're going to talk about, which is the little girl who died after entering the border, just was really obnoxious and said, that's her parents' fault. Like, he's blaming the father for bringing her in. And so I tweeted, go stab yourself. So Twitter said I was violating their policy by encouraging self-harm. And then, so they banned me last night for 12 hours, which should have been up today. And it said I could browse Twitter while I'm banned. I just couldn't like or retweet or do anything. I mistakenly liked something, so they reset the clock for 12 more hours.
Are you kidding me? Meanwhile, President of the United States of America has tweeted violence against journalists and hate against judges and law enforcement and people of color. But he's verified, and that's okay. But Robbie,
I'm verified, goddammit. I'm verified. Anyway,
but verified Auntie Rabia, who did a metaphorical stab, somehow gets banned. This is why Twitter is insane. So it's a good segue if you want to talk about what we thought we were going to talk about yesterday, was those two new reports that dropped that showed the intense, still active meddling of Russian intelligence when it comes to using and abusing our social media platforms against the United States interests.
Well, actually, I want to get into that once we get into the 17 investigations.
No, my bad. We forgot that. Yeah, there's 17 investigations. Yeah. And also because on Twitter.
Speaking of people who get banned on Twitter and don't get banned on Twitter, I wanted to start off with something a little bit more lighthearted. And that was Trump's recent threat against Saturday Night Live, which, I remember the good old days when presidents could take Saturday Night Live. Remember Dana Carvey?
Dana Carvey, actually, his impression of George H.W. Bush was so spot on that George H.W. Bush, if people remember, actually laughed at it, invited him to the White House. Dana Carvey stayed in the White House and actually developed a kind of a rapport and relationship with George H.W. Bush. And it wasn't like, he gave him these light barbs. I mean, it was a pretty scathing but hilarious portrayal of George H.W. Bush.
Bill Clinton destroyed,
but Daryl Hammond. Apparently, Daryl Hammond said that Bill Clinton kind of was peeved when they, to meet each other. But at the same time, he didn't like tweet out against him or, do any speeches against him. He laughed, but he was a little bit peeved.
Lawsuit?
Yeah, there's no lawsuit. There was no angry late night tweets or him sitting in his pajamas eating fried chicken, sending basically televised speeches denouncing SNL. But with Trump, Rabia, apparently he doesn't watch SNL, but he watches it, and he doesn't watch CNN, but he watches it.
Right. He tweeted, "A real scandal is the one-sided coverage hour by hour of networks like NBC and Democrat spin machines like Saturday Night Live. It is all nothing less than unfair." Okay, grammatically doesn't make sense. But anyway, "less than unfair news coverage and Dem commercials. Should be tested in courts. Can't be legal." Does he not understand, the First Amendment? Can't be legal? Saturday Night Live can't be legal? Is he crazy?
No, he's not crazy. And the thing is, I think we underestimate him and we neuter the actual harm and dangerous precedent, he says, by calling him crazy. I think, a crazy person is an individual who has no awareness of his or her actions or rhetoric. Trump does. Trump, and what you're just saying right now, and it's really frightening. I know we laugh, But then after I laughed, I just thought about it for a second. This is the president of the United States of America, which allegedly is a democratic free society with, like you said, the First Amendment. And yes, it's not perfect, but nonetheless, men and women have died for these freedoms and protections. But what he wants really, Rabia, is an authoritarian state. He wants to be the leader of that state, which is why he praises Duterte of Philippines, who's cracked down on journalists, right? Which is why he doesn't seem to give an F about Jamal Khashoggi, who was, bring that back up again, because he was tortured and murdered, which is why he actually even praised Erdogan and his crackdown on journalists. And so that's really troubling, right? That this is the president of the United States of America, and the Republican Party seems to just give him a pass again and again and again. So I know you went lighthearted, and I kind of took it to a very dark terrain really quickly, but it just shows you like how we've normalized this type of behavior because he does it so frequently, and it's totally not normal, especially not for the United States of America.
No, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I guess the lighthearted part of it is this, the Saturday Night Live bit, which was actually pretty brilliant. But no, you're right. This is like, this is basically the same thing he does with media, you know, and then in the wake of that stuff, journalists have gotten killed because of incitement against the media. I don't know what he thinks. I don't know. I wonder if this is like, in a way, incitement against like this cast, you know, or the people who produce this show. But it could totally trigger the wrong person to do that. I mean, why wouldn't it?
Of course, of course. And going back to you being banned for your comment from Twitter, I mean, and I know there's just such a barrage of Trump stuff, but because we've been in the thick of this filthy swamp, this filthy orange swamp of Trumpism for the past 2 years, you know, he's tweeted out these memes and GIFs of body slamming CNN reporter, right, or the, you know, the photos of the CNN reporter getting destroyed by a train. That's violence. And, you know, just, and I think we completely forgot that it's, it hasn't been, I think, only 2 weeks since, actually a week since CNN headquarters, right? There was another threat.
There were threats, sir, yeah.
Yeah, that barely made a blip. And then recently when CNN had to completely evacuate. Oh, and by the way, we've totally forgotten this, that man who had the ice cream truck, but instead of ice cream flavors, it had every flavor of conspiracy theories on the side with gets of all the people, and he sent out essentially live bombs.
All those packages, yeah.
Yeah, all those packages, and he believed every single conspiracy theory that was spouted by Trump and Fox News and thought these were the enemies of the people, and this included elected officials and members of the media. So I think this is deeply troubling, and it just makes me kind of wonder what demons it has unleashed, because the last thing I'll say is, you know Jay Inberger, right, in the NatSec circles, national security circles, but he... Yeah. Essentially says, you know, Trump's behavior kind of reminds him of like these like radical mullahs who, if you want to trigger and inspire, like, say, their base of fundamentalists and extremists, all they have to do is like go on YouTube or do a tweet. So imagine if Donald Trump.
So you're, what you're saying is these are Trump's fatwas, basically.
Yeah. You know, think about it. Exactly. That. Suppose Trump does a fatwa as the walls are closing in, and suppose he just becomes more belligerent, more bold, and more blunt. Do we really think in the United States of America, which has like the highest number of like gun-related violence of any Western country, do we really think that some of his supporters won't take it literally? Question.
You know what? Forget that. He actually, didn't he just last week tweet something about if people try to impeach me, if there's like, then there'll probably be like a revolution or something. Like he tweeted something like that, which was a clear incitement.
Yeah, yeah. So he says, if they do impeachment, there will be a revolution in this country. And I don't think he said the word revolution, but something resembling insurrection.
That word he wouldn't know. But yeah, definitely. He was basically just planting the seed. Wink, wink, he plants nudge, the seeds,
wink,
right?
Nudge, nudge. Exactly. And, you know, think about it. Like all this repeated 2 to 3 year attack on the media, on journalists, on law enforcement, on judges. Everything is now a conspiracy theory. It's quote, quote, deep state. And so his base, which is about, what, 30 to 40% of the country, is already triggered. And all they need is a little bit of a spark. And, of course, the overwhelming majority are not violent. We're, you know, I don't believe that. But it just takes a few. And I think we have enough evidence that as the walls are closing in, and, like, you know, you tipped off to your audience with the 17 investigations and things going pretty bad for people in the Trump orbit, as Mueller closes in, as the helicopters are above his head, you know, I think he's gonna be a desperate man. He's gonna lash out.
Yeah.
All right, ladies, I want to tell you about my favorite pants, like my favorite pants ever. I don't say that lightly because I'll be honest, I've never really had favorite pants until I started wearing Beta Brand. Why do I love Beta Brand pants? It's because they look like pants, but they don't feel like pants. I am that person who would like just live in sweatpants and yoga pants if they could, and with Beta Brand pants, I can. I love Beta Brand dress pant, yoga pant. It is a party on the top, because it's nice and comfy like a yoga pant, but it is all business on the bottom. There is nobody who can tell that I am wearing something that's actually kind of a yoga pant. It has belt loops, it's got a little front button, it's got faux zippers and pockets. It's even got dress pant detailing. They've got so many different options. I mean, so I got the legging style. I love it. It's a real thick ponte fabric. It's just really beautiful. Every time I wear these pants, my friends ask me, like, where did you get these? But they have boot cut, straight leg, and all kinds of colors, black, navy, gray, khakis, all your essentials. They even have seasonal and limited edition colors that come out every month, selections for all shapes and sizes. Now, I bought my Beta Brand about 4 or 5 months ago, or maybe about 6 months ago, and I was about 30 pounds heavier. I've been like in a fitness program for the last 3-4 months. I've lost 30 pounds. They fit me fantastic then. They actually still fit pretty comfy now, but I'm gonna get some more. But anyway, if you visit betabrand.com and use our code 45th, you'll get 20% off Beta Brand dress pant and yoga pants, or any pants that you want. Millions of women agree that these are the most comfortable pants that you'll ever wear to work or at home or wherever you want. That's betabrand.com, BETABRAND.com. Use our code 45th and get 20% off your dress pant yoga pants today. I want to move on to another story. This took place on December 6th, but I don't think the story broke until just a few days ago. And this is of this little girl, Jacqueline Calmaquin, 7-year-old migrant girl who basically entered, her father and her were a group of 163 people who basically surrendered to border security, you know, border patrol officers on December 6th in New Mexico. And she had been traveling, I guess, by foot for days. I don't know how long. There are reports that like that group been dropped off where they were dropped off by like one of those mules, you know, the smugglers who take money from them and exploit these people basically, and then sometimes abandon them. And there have been horrific stories. I remember the story a few years ago in which these smugglers were smuggling people into the country in a like an 18-wheeler or something, or some kind of a closed van situation, closed truck situation. And then they abandoned them in the middle of the desert when they realized immigration authorities were coming after them. And people, like everybody inside, died from suffocation and heat. So this is how exploited the migrants are by these, I would say, criminals. But anyhow, this little girl reports her, she hadn't eaten or had any water for several days. And when they took all of them into custody, you know, immigration is saying she seemed okay. But then within hours afterwards, she began having seizures and her body temperature was off the charts. She died. And, you know, first of all, I want to point out that there are lots of videos online of our Border Patrol officers, CBP officers, people we pay, okay, that use our tax dollars, going out into the desert, and where people who care about the condition of the migrants have left water. There are videos of them emptying out water bottles, like entire gallons, just emptying it into the desert. I mean,
with glee, with smiles on their faces.
Right. And so if you're going to tell me this little girl hadn't had food or water in days, she might have had water if somebody hadn't emptied it out. Like, we don't know. I don't know what could have or couldn't have been. But that's something that's not just, and it's done by CBP, but it's also done by these Minutemen militias, these crazy white nationalists who also do the same thing. And it's horrifying that we have these things happen. And this is not new. This has been going on for years, by the way, this whole struggle of them emptying out the water. But it's the cruelty of it is astonishing to me. So now what's even more cruel is that the government, every response from the White House to immigration, DHS, all of it has been like, well, her daddy shouldn't have taken her into the desert. And I want to listen to soulless Stephen Miller appeared on Face the Nation, complete with a sprayed on patch of hair on his head. Did you see that, by the way?
You know, I tried desperately to pay attention to what he was saying, but that spray on was so remarkable and enticing to me visually that it's kind of like, like literally all like right when you mention it, I just got this slow motion close up of the spray on tan. That's literally what happened. Like this giant forehead and everything that he was talking about just washed away as this image of this spray on. You know, the proof that Stephen Miller has no friends is that nobody told him that right. was ridiculous. That's proof that man literally has zero friends on earth.
That applies to Trump as well. I was going to say, I wonder if the two of them ever looked at each other and think, God dang it, somebody's going to tell him about his hair. I mean, I don't know. And look, my husband is proudly, you know, clean shaven, bald. I love his bald head. I'm cool with it. It's not about the baldness, people. Nobody's bald shaming here. We are spray on hair shaming, and I'm okay with that.
Stephen Miller shaming. I'm just Steve. I'm all for the shaming and humiliation of Stephen Miller. Yeah. If you want to go on with a terrible spray on Fox News and spout bigoted nonsense, you do you. But if you're Stephen Miller,
come after you.
Yeah, we're going to come after you.
All right, so let's listen to what he had to say on Face the Nation about this incident and also about the wall.
Lives every single year. Unfortunately, hundreds die on the dangerous trek up. Smuggling organizations profit off death and misery. They are vicious, vile organizations. And it's time that both parties had the appropriate level of outrage over the fact that these organizations continue to take advantage.
Adequately equipped to deal with the record number of families coming across. Why aren't they?
One of the great tragedies that is going on in our country today is the loopholes in our immigration laws and the deficiencies in our immigration laws and left-wing activist judicial rulings that incentivize the most vulnerable populations to come to our country. Last year, 100,000. Last year, 100,000 unaccompanied alien children or children traveling with adults showed up at our southern border. Mm-hmm. President Trump took dramatic action, issued an executive order directing illegal traffic to the ports of entry. But a left-wing activist judge issued a reckless nationwide injunction on the president's order, putting thousands of lives at risk and further enriching these grotesque,
and a record number continued to cross. I want to quickly, though, get to, because we're going to run out of time, I want to get to this question of the border wall, which I know you're a huge advocate for. We are about 5 days from potential government shutdown, and Republican leadership says there's no plan. What is the president's plan, and will he shut it down to get this $5 billion in border wall funding?
We're going to do whatever is necessary to build the border wall to stop this ongoing crisis of illegal immigration.
And that means
if it comes to it, absolutely. This is a very fundamental issue. At stake is the question of whether or not the United States remains a sovereign country, whether or not we can establish and enforce rules for entrance into our country. The Democrat Party is a simple choice. They can either choose to fight for America's working class or to promote illegal immigration. You can't do both.
Is there wiggle room on that $5 billion?
Are you still confused about what to get some of your loved ones for Christmas? Because, I'm sorry, you don't have a whole lot of time. But I have a great gift idea for you that you can order online, not going to cost you a bunch of stuff, something that your loved ones are going to use twice a day. And I'm talking about the Quip toothbrush. It's not just a Quip toothbrush, though, all right? First of all, let me tell you about it. I've been using Quip for about a year now. It's an electric toothbrush. It's one of the most gift-guided gifts of the season. People are just buying it left and right. Of course, it works for every single person. There's nobody who can't use a good toothbrush. This is why I love Quip. First of all, it's got these really sensitive sonic vibrations. It's really gentle if you have sensitive gums. It has a built-in timer, so it tells you when you need to switch sides. You know that, oh, it's been 2 minutes. I'm done cleaning my mouth. It's very sleek looking. Mine is beautiful. It's white and gold and comes in this fancy little travel case. It's much smaller than any electric brush I've ever had, so that is what I travel with all the time. The brush also comes with a great toothpaste. They have their own toothpaste. I love it. They even send you a little travel size that I travel with. And one of the best features, honestly, is this, and I am so embarrassed to admit this. I have bought electric brushes over the years. I almost never buy the heads to change because I just forget. Like, I'll go to the grocery store 20 times and I forget to buy new brush heads, and so I just keep on using the same old funky brush head. But Quip is a gift that keeps on giving and refreshing because brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months. Every 3 months, when you sign up for the Quip subscription, that brush head is going to come to you or to your loved one for just $5. And you can even gift prepaid refills for a whole year. Imagine, you've got a loved one out there, you got a college student out there somewhere, you got whatever, whoever it is, you know, just prepay for the whole year. That person's going to enjoy great dental health all year. Now look, Quip looks like a big ticket tech gift. A lot of people like techie stuff, you know, fancy things for Christmas. This is one of those things.
But it comes at a stocking stuffer price, starting at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack absolutely free with a Quip electric toothbrush, but you don't have to tell the person you're gifting any of it. So get your first refill pack absolutely free at getquip.com/45th. Don't miss out. You've got 1 week to the holidays. Get your Quip. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com, getquip.com/45th.
I want to talk about this, I thought, insane press, like this release, this I guess it's a press, I don't know what you call it, on DHS.gov. This is on the Department of Homeland Security website, okay? This is the title. We are building the first new border wall in a decade. Now, look, I'm going to read this. You know what? They actually changed the language.
Do you have the old? Oh, we should have taken some.
Oh, man, I don't have the old one. Okay, so initially, swear to God, I think Trump wrote it. It was like, it was something about, well, now it's like DHS committed to building a wall at our southern border and building a wall quickly. Under this president, we're building a new wall for the first time in decades, 30 feet high, to prevent illegal entry, drugs, and smuggling. Okay, that sounds actually kind of like somebody rational wrote it. The original version was like, it'll be the biggest wall nobody's ever seen. I mean, like, it was literally like Trump wrote it. It was embarrassing.
It was like a 12-year-old mashing away at his keyboard with his fists while eating Cheetos. All will be built. I'll build it. I'll show you. And maybe Trump wrote it, but maybe Miller wrote it. And, you know, when you call Miller Satan, I think it's offensive to Satan, because Satan is actually, you know, a very, like, intelligent, you know, highly, I think, evolved demonic.
Have you not been excommunicated enough times, Wajahat? Come on.
I'm just saying, like, I think Stephen Miller is more like a minion of Satan, like one of those like loser minions.
Low level. Yeah, he ain't powerful enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Why call him Satan?
Speaking of the wall, you know, I mean, like we've been also, there's been a lot of tweets about the wall and the lot. I think Trump, what he's doing now, he's like grasping for a win. There's been such shitty news. I mean, like the stock market's tanking. Farmers are like, you know, struggling. He just tweeted out the other day that, I mean, like, both of these things in the same tweet, by the way. Number one, our economy is doing great. Number two, we're going to give bailouts to farmers and ranchers. So don't worry, we've got your back. Well, you can't have it both ways. But farmers and ranchers are suffering because of his tariffs and the trade wars that he's put us in. You know, you've got major companies shutting down left and right, huge layoffs. I mean, all the news is grim. So he keeps going back to his wall.
Well, it's like a band which has run out of any original ideas that keeps playing the greatest hits because the dwindling audience that comes wants to hear it. And I'll give you one example of why he doubles down on the wall. It's because the base is fueled primarily by racial anxiety. And the base, led by Ann Coulter and others, desperately wants the wall because the base is really triggered by the minority-majority status of this country. And they believe in this whole replacement theory, white conspiracy theory, which says that essentially people like you and me and, you know, children of immigrants and immigrants and people of color will replace the, quote, white man, which will replace what they believe is the great Judeo-Christian civilization, although the Judeo part was conveniently added in the 20th century. They don't really like the Jews. And so I'll give you one example, right, because you're mentioning the economy. Just go back to the midterms, right? It wasn't that long ago, just last month. At that time, unemployment, right, it was like a 3.7, 3.8%. It's like a historic low. The week before the midterm election, they had a good job report came out. There was 250,000 jobs that were added. The stock market wasn't like tanking like it is right now, but you had a bullish economy. Now, just for the listeners, just to show you how bad Trump is, historically, weak presidents, both Republican and Democrats, in such a bullish, strong economy, have had approval ratings of anywhere from mid-50s to low-60s. Trump's approval rating is at 40, meaning they were able to ride a strong economy even though they were weak. What does Trump decide to do? What does he voluntarily decide to do for the midterm elections? He triples down on the caravan. Anti-immigrant nonsense, anti-Muslim nonsense, race baiting, fear, hysteria. Now look at it, right? They're going to threaten to shut down the government over what? The wall. And so it just goes to show, I just want to like just drill this home to all the people who are like, is he racially tinged? Are there racial flare-ups? Maybe he had a racial trip up. No, cruelty and racism is the core of Trumpism. It's the core of the modern Republican Party under Donald Trump, which is why, despite all this nonsense that's happening, what does he keep focusing on? Like laser focus. I need a hit. I need a hit. Caravan. Whoa. And you know, I think now his signature economic policy, the tax cuts, have actually directly led to the Rust Belt being bled, because instead of these massive corporations, Rabia, giving the money back, right, trickle down, they used it to get fatter. And now, instead of, you know, giving it back to the workers, guess what they invested in? Automation. So the Rust Belt is screwed. Housing markets in the Northeast.
Are you telling me coal's not back yet?
Coal's not coming back. Climate change is getting worse. And I think, you know, now, what do I know? But basically, if you look at the experts, we're going to be facing a recession within 2 years. So, you know, sucks for all the Rust Belt Trump voters. I really mean it. It really sucks. And the final thing I'll say is, I've said this on your show before, I think the only way the hardcore Trump supporters will learn, and I hate saying this, I do, because unlike them, I'm not cruel, is through immense pain. Immense pain. And I think the immense pain is coming with what you just said.
My worry is this, because you know what, Trump is not going to own any of the failures. He's going to say, well, that was Congress. That's the media. That's this. That's the brown people. That's the black people. He's going to basically redirect the rage, and those people can take it out on somebody else, because he always absolves himself. And so that's my worry. It's not that they're going to feel the pain, but I don't know if they'll take that pain out where it deserves to be taken out. I feel like they could take it out on people who are vulnerable.
Two things. Trump has already admitted, right? The reports came out that when they talked about the surging debt and deficit under the Republicans and Paul Ryan, he said, well, that'll be out of office by then. And number two, when the recession hits, he's going to be out of office. He goes, I don't care. So he's already admitted, like he's already showed his hand that he's like, well, I'm going to be out of office, not going to be on me. But I do think this lingering stench will follow the Republicans. And also another big news from last week is that judge who struck down Obamacare in its entirety. That's not going to go to the Supreme Court. And that was extremely damaging to the Republicans. And because they've been on their repeal and replace for 7 years, enough American voters finally realized that, wait a second, Republicans are the ones who are against protecting pre-existing conditions.
Wait. Can you say that again? Did you say the judge did not strike down Obamacare?
No, he didn't strike it down. It's impossible to strike it down completely. But basically, pardon me for misspeaking, but basically he said the individual mandate aspect of Obamacare, like the linchpin.
But that's not constitutional.
It's not constitutional. Okay. So which essentially, if he was, say, the Supreme Court, and that was his reasoning, that would mean Obamacare in its entirety is illegal and thus has to be demolished. And so that gives, at least as you know, an opening for Republicans to take that case to their Supreme Court. They could do it, and they probably will, because they're cruel. It's going to come at their peril. And suppose what's going to happen? Suppose they actually dissolve and destroy Obamacare. Well, what are they going to replace it with?
Nothing. They've never had a replacement. Yeah.
It's literally the Rust Belt voters who will suffer. It's the voters of Mitch McConnell's home state, Kentucky, who will suffer the most. They love Obamacare, as long as you don't call it Obamacare. That's how hilarious all this is. And at the second part of your point is exactly my concern as well. I think, look, it's a guesstimate, who knows? But I think the Trump's base can be separated in like three quadrants. A third of them will be like, we got played. Damn it, he fooled us. A second third will be too proud. They'll admit they got played, but either they'll just not vote Democrat or they probably just stay out the next election, right? I'm really afraid of that last third, because I think that last third will burn it all down.
Those last third who are ready to burn it down, I feel like we have something comparable on the left too. And that did impact the last election. There was a faction of people on the left, progressives on the left, who said, you know, we'd rather burn it all down than give our vote to Hillary. So, and that's working out real great. But
and, you know, breaking news just happened. Government shutdown still possible after Democrats reject new GOP offer on immigration and border security funding.
Yeah. Well, Trump, I mean, like in his meeting last week, he said he'd own it. He's like, I don't care. I'll shut it all down. All right. Shut it down. It is what it is. I mean, like, you know, he's accepting it. And Schumer and Pelosi walked out of there like Cheshire cats, you know, they're like, well, he said it.
I think that image that gif of Pelosi. Is going to be like the new Kermit drinking his tea.
Yeah, that's like the new reclaiming my time, basically. All right, so I want to talk about all of the many nooses that are closing around Trump, and I think our insight. I mean, like, I don't know. Me and Susan were talking about this last week. By the way, we had Kumail Nanjiani on last week, which was kind of amazing.
Look at that. I'm a step down. I apologize, 45th listeners.
I bet you people think you are also Kumail Nanjiani. Y'all look the same.
I'm the guy that Rabia and Susan get when Kumail says no. So it's one of those weeks. It's the week before Christmas. This is what you get.
The week before Christmas.
You get the bench warmers. But I'm going to bring
Was it Sarah Silverman who's like, I think she tweeted at Kumail and Cal Penn and somebody else and said, how come you have three different accounts?
Yes.
Anyway. You funny brown guys. Anyway, now Susan and I were talking about this, and I said I feel like there is like an increase in intensity and frequency with Trump's panic tweets. But she's like, no, I think it's always been like that. But I feel like things are getting kind of hairy with the Cohen and Flynn, all of it stuff. But let's talk about the 17 investigations that are currently pending against this administration in one way or the other, or people connected to the administration. And of course, we're going to start with the attack of the Russian government on the election in 2016. So as we know, Mueller's been investigating this for a couple of years. We know there's been active cyber intrusion by the military unit, the GRU in Russia, and also the infamous Internet Research Agency. The status of that is that, you know, we've had 12 military intelligence officers indicted. Of course, they're in Russia. So 13 people indicted from the Internet Research Agency. There's Manafort's aide, Sam Patton's, cooperating with investigators about this specific thing. And then yesterday, I think yesterday's New York Times report came out about the scope and the kind of the target of this Russian social media campaign to impact the election. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, so it's one of those another moments of people of color told you so, but no one listened to us. And specifically what we said about Trump, that take his racism literally and seriously. But specifically, Russia has been exploiting lingering discord in America, especially when it comes to racism, anti-Black sentiment, and anti-Muslim sentiment. And two reports that were commissioned by the Senate Intelligence Committee essentially concluded that Russia did an influence campaign in 2016 by the Internet Research Agency, as mentioned, to target Black communities in particular. Mm. And specifically, they used all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, across the board. And what they were trying to do was kind of essentially play on existing anti-Black sentiment and racial discord to try to suppress the Black vote. And so it's like Russians are trying to take away the Black vote. It's like, damn it,
right?
Republicans in Georgia and North Carolina, but even Russians are like, all right, Black people, we're going to do everything we can to suppress your vote. And you know, it was a very sophisticated.
So how would they try to suppress the vote though? Just by encouraging them not to vote?
Well, I'll give you an example, right? The most popular Russia Instagram account was at Blackstagram with 303,000 followers. They also created like lots of websites, almost a dozen websites disguised as African-American origin with like names like blacktivist.info, blacktolive.org, blacksoul.us, blackmattersus.com. They also did one Facebook post called American Fury, not American, American, which also attacked Robert Mueller in the investigation. And basically what they were saying was, listen, America is against you. F the system. They don't care about Black Lives Matters. And Black voter turnout declined in 2016, Rabia, for the first time in 20 years in a presidential election. Now, the reports. They didn't make a correlation. They didn't make a correlation saying, OK, because of the Russia disinformation campaign, this directly led to it. But it is very important to note that Black voter turnout declined in 2016 for the first time in 20 years. And also, they didn't just go after Black voters or play on the racial discord and anti-Black sentiment in America. They also went after Bernie and Jill Stein supporters and said the system is rigged. The DNC is a bunch of elitists. Don't vote. F the system. And you and I know a lot of people who did exactly that. They did not vote for Clinton.
It made me crazy. It made me crazy. They were literally circulating these exact messages, not just and some very influential like leaders in like minority communities, by the way, were circulating these messages that, you know what, better just not to vote. Don't vote for even the lesser of two evils, basically. Like that's the way to put it.
Both are evil. Both are evil. The system is rigged. Everything is stacked against you. So just don't even vote.
I lost Facebook friends. I like blocked Facebook friends over that. I was like, I can't. I just can't.
Like you said, very informed, intelligent people chose not to vote. And let's not forget that Donald Trump won only due to 78,000 votes in three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. That's it. Right. The Electoral College gave it to him, which kills you, right? And you think about it, you're like, oh my God.
If 50,000, I mean, he could have gotten 78,000 extra Muslim votes in Michigan alone, probably. But yeah, I can guarantee many, many, many people stayed home and just refused to cast any votes because they bought the messages.
I want to quote one of the individuals who wrote the report said, it's, quote, very real racial tensions and feelings of alienation exist in America and have for decades. The Internet Research Agency didn't create them. It exploits them. And I also want to add that, you know, the reason why I started this off by saying, as we've been telling you, is because a bunch of us noticed this and we said that, look, Russia is trying to exploit existing racial and religious fear, which Donald Trump is blaring out there in the public to divide us. What they also tried to do was foment fear of against Muslims. So those were the two groups that the Russian disinformation campaign really affected, was the Black Lives Matter issue and the radical Islamic threat issue. And lo and behold, Donald Trump and his campaign, right? What was it? The Muslim ban. I think Islam hates. And one just analogy I want to give to your listeners is this is exactly what ISIS wants. ISIS and Al-Qaeda are not stupid. They realize they can't destroy America. Their strategy the whole time has been death by a thousand cuts. They want to also exploit racial religious divides in America. They believe sincerely that underneath all this, you know, wishy-washy Hallmark talk of like freedoms and liberties, that we secretly hate each other. And they believe there's no gray zone. They believe it's the West hates Islam. And so they want to incite this anti-Muslim hatred for recruitment and propaganda. Because what does it do at the end of the day? And this is what Russia wants. It weakens us as a civic democracy. They want to essentially poison us from within, exploiting our racial and religious tensions. And it seems that, unfortunately, they were successful at it. And the final thing I'll say, which is terrifying, is the both reports have said that these are, quote, active and ongoing interference operations.
That was a big story that broke yesterday, and it shows like kind of like the nuts and bolts of how this is done. And, you know, we've been understanding this more and more in the last year or so, but I do think the scary part is that it's ongoing. And how do you prevent this? How do you even prevent it? Let's say you don't have foreign influences doing it. There's no reason that domestic operatives can't do the same thing and just replicate it, because what they're doing is all you got to do is pose as somebody else, right? Pose as a Black Lives Matter activist, pose as whatever, and just foment, you know, these kinds of narratives and make people stay home. I mean, I actually wish I could go back and kind of try to find some of the folks, like, you know, the legitimate people who should have known better that were circulating these kinds of things and be like, now what? What do you think now? What are you going to do in the next election?
What's even more dangerous is because Russia was trying to actually recruit Black Americans as assets. And it wasn't just relegated to social media. There were also rallies, like real life rallies. So they inspired people to actually get out on the streets and, like, you know, do small rallies and protest and hold signs. We should all be very concerned about this because it's active, it's ongoing. And like you said, right now, the social media platforms have not, let's just say, been as proactive as we need them to be.
Yeah, no, it's scary. It's scary because it's hard to know what's real and what's not anymore. And, you know, Facebook is very complicit in this. I read that 81 Facebook pages were created by the Internet Research Agency. 30 of them targeted African-American audiences. They had 1.2 million followers. I mean, this is like some major impact they had. Look, New Year's is right around the corner, and I know you're all thinking about what your resolutions are going to be. And for many of us, those resolutions are about being healthier one way or the other. Resolutions are hard. We all know this. They're so hard, in fact, that only about 20% actually stick to the resolution, and 80% kind of don't make it. But look, there's no quick fix when it comes to better health, right? You have to start good daily habits, and you actually have to stick to them. But it is easier to do that when the habits are not that difficult to actually incorporate. For example, your vitamin habit. Now look, I've been that person who's had drawers full of vitamins for years. I never took them because it was just intimidating. It's too many pills. I don't want to swallow 10 pills a day. And I don't have to do that because about 6 months ago, I started taking
Ritual. Now, Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin for women, all right? Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get enough from our diets. They are all in their purest, cleanest forms. There's no shady additives. There's no ingredients that will do more harm to your body than good. And here is the best part. All you need is 2 capsules a day. 2 easy-to-take capsules. They give you 9 nutrients that you need to build a stronger foundation for better health. Ritual has D3, omega-3. It fills in the gaps in a woman's diet. It's got a fresh, minty flavor. Ladies, some of these vitamins, man, especially the omega-3 stuff, like the fishiness, it's hard. You don't have that with Ritual. Nice and minty. And look, Ritual comes right to your door every 30 days. I'm not kidding. I actually subscribed to Ritual before they ever became a sponsor. And it made a noticeable difference in my energy levels and how I was sleeping. I just felt better and I could do it. It's manageable. So if you want to like incorporate a new ritual into your life for your New Year's resolutions, I really, really encourage for the women out there to check out Ritual Vitamins. They have really kind of been the first time in my life that I've actually taken vitamins regularly because they make it so easy. Look, better health doesn't happen overnight, so start your year with Essential for Women, a small step that helps create a healthy foundation for 2019 and beyond. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. Take it from me, it will change how you feel. That's ritual.com/45th and start your ritual today.
I'm going to go through a couple of them we'll talk about in depth. A lot of them it's going to have to be brief because there are so many and we don't want to do like 3 hours of this, but the WikiLeaks investigation, and that investigation is about whether or not the WikiLeaks publishing of the email stolen by Russian hackers connects from Moscow to Trump Tower, right? Like, so what is the connection here to the Trump campaign itself in terms of like, were they helping coordinate any of this? Now, there are apparently some charges that Julian Assange might be facing, and Roger Stone and Jerome Corsi have both said that they expect to be indicted as part of this particular investigation. So, you know, that remains to be seen. Another investigation that's ongoing, which, I mean, I think this just broke a couple days ago in a big way, was an investigation into the inauguration and the funds that were raised by Trump's inauguration committee. So $107 million was raised by the Trump inauguration committee, which is record numbers. It's like twice as much that was raised by George W. Bush's inauguration committee. $40 million of that is unaccounted for. Nobody knows where it went, number one. Number two, we know now that foreign governments were funneling money into the inauguration funds, but also into the campaign itself. So the Wall Street Journal, New York Times have said that federal prosecutors are looking into whether Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and UAE illegally donated to the inaugural fund. So, and what do they do with that money? They actually lined their own pockets with it. They did things like they used money from the inauguration funds to pay Trump-owned entities to host like their events. Like, apparently they're going to have some event at one of the Trump hotels, and Ivanka actually was part of the negotiation, and which was that the venue would charge $175,000 a day for the space, money that was, yeah, raised by the inaugural committee for him.
Totally normal.
Crazy.
Totally
normal. And so, you know, I think the news is closing in around her too. So that's like 3 of the investigations. A fourth one is, and I just learned about this recently, is apparently there's an investigation, a federal investigation into the influence of Middle East actors. So apparently this investigation centers on the role of UAE, Saudi, and Israel, which were eager to help the campaign, like before the election. And in some cases, they already have ties to Trump and Jared Kushner. But this is why Jared was so, made so many trips out there. And, you know, and he's like a kind of a key focus of, he was being groomed basically by all of these nations, but also I think he wanted to be groomed, right? I mean, he had his own personal stakes, right? Like bank loans that he wanted, and they're looking at investments maybe down the line. So that's being looked at.
Basically, all those countries realized that they can manipulate Jared Kushner. They realized he was totally green and over his head. And because of the opaque financial trail of his own organization to all these countries, they realized they could play him. And this is why so many people said, listen, you have to divest before you become president, because essentially then it's susceptible for you to be bribed or corrupted, which is why, you know, Jimmy Carter, of all people,
they're already corrupt, though.
You know, but look, if Carter had to sell his little peanut farm, because he's like, all right, I don't even want to like even get into any potential gray waters. And so there's also the emoluments clause, right, that he has gone against because, you know, he really has not divested from his companies. There's been no real divestment. And these Saudi Arabia in particular, why did Saudi Arabia all of a sudden after Trump became president, all of a sudden go to Trump hotels? Because they realized they were lining Trump's pockets. And I just want to say for Jared Kushner,
for like 500 rooms at a time.
There you go. Because it's like, all right, we'll just kind of bribe you. And Jared Kushner, the boy wonder who will apparently bring peace to the Middle East and also help entrepreneurship, was very close to MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who directed the murder and torture of Jamal Khashoggi, the U.S. resident and journalist for the Washington Post, bragged that I have Jared Kushner, quote, in my back pocket. Mm. And also just China, like, just wait. Once the, the least sexy aspect of this is the financial trail, because you have to sit down and, you know, crank the numbers and follow all the leads. But Robert Mueller's team has a lot of pros who have done money laundering. There's a reason for that. I think once the financial trail reaches across the Atlantic, specifically to Russia and, say, Saudi Arabia, in China, I think it will expose Trump, his associates, and also Jared Kushner. This is like exceedingly dangerous territory all of them are in. And you mentioned Ivanka as well. And if I can jump to another scandal that just happened today, so this might be the 18th scandal, or maybe this is part of the 17th. The Trump Foundation closed. It's
that's
shuttering
part of the, Yeah, that's one of the investigations that's been ongoing. So let's talk about what just happened. I know that news broke today.
Yeah, so the Trump Foundation is shuttering its doors. Why? Because basically New York has accused it of a history and pattern of ongoing deceit and lying. And basically what this was for your listeners is a charitable organization that the Trump family started. I repeat, a charitable organization that was deliberately used and abused by the Trump family for self-profit and political maneuverings. So imagine how low and shameful you have to be.
Oh, my God. It's so disgusting.
Deceive people to say, hey, give money to this charitable organization that will be used to, you know, help people, vulnerable people, but instead use that foundation to actually line your own pockets.
I was reading about how, like, when they traced some of the donations, because first of all, this foundation would, Trump would like show up at events and make pledges, like hold this big check of $100,000 from some charity, never actually give the money over. But a couple of the payments that were made and verified only served the Trumps. So for example, I mean, get this, one of the biggest donations the foundation made was like $250,000, not a lot, but $250,000 for the restoration of a fountain. Okay. Now that might sound like, okay, well, it's a public service, but no, this fountain was apparently in front of a Trump property and had a direct impact on their property somehow. So that benefited them. And the smallest donation was this. It was a $7 donation. I mean, I can't understand this. Like, why they would have to do this instead of just fucking writing or just giving their kids $7, a $7 donation to the Boy Scouts. And you know why that's significant? Because $7 is what it costs for Don Jr. to like sign his kid up for Boy Scouts. They donated $7 out of this fund instead of just paying it out of their pocket. I personally don't understand like how depraved and how deep like the greed. How greedy do you have to be like, I am a multimillionaire, but I'm going to use money that somebody donated as charity to pay for my kid's Boy Scout enrollment for $7.
When you're a star, they let you get away with it.
Anything.
He said,
they're really gutter people. Gutter people.
Because Donald Trump has been protected by privilege his entire life. First, it was due to his daddy's wealth. Then it was due to celebrity. As a TV show host.
Listen, I know, we probably both know people who are generationally wealthy. Not everybody turns out this despicably disgusting. I mean, but
it's your DNA. That's your family DNA. Because another big whopper of a story in early October that, and it's part of your 17 investigations, was how apparently Donald Trump, along with his father, inflated his inherited wealth thanks to tax fraud.
The tax case is another investigation that's ongoing. Yeah.
And he's so, you know, like, first of all, you already have inherited millions of dollars. You don't really need to engage in criminal activity to inflate it. But he did, to inflate that wealth. And because he's so incompetent and reckless, he lost all of that wealth, too. if he had just literally, people say if he had literally just not touched that wealth and just put it in like the safest, basically, stock option possible, it would have generated so much more wealth. But because of Donald Trump and he corrupts everything he touches, he managed to F up his considerable inheritance he got from his father that both of them inflated thanks to tax fraud. Like that's, it's like layers of criminality, yeah. Stupidity, corruption, greed.
Yeah, I will say this. So on the foundation issue, yeah, today they said they're just going to close the foundation. That doesn't make the crime go away, by the way. Like it's, you already committed the crimes, right? You cannot use charitable donations for like your personal stuff. So I don't know how that's going to, but I have a feeling that his panic, because that charity was mostly run, I think, by Ivanka and Don Jr.
There you go.
And I think, yeah, I think he's panicked for his kids. Let's talk about the Turkish investigation, all right? Now, what we know is, according to court documents, Michael Flynn contributed to two different investigations beyond the Russia probe. He was supposed to be sentenced today, did not get sentenced. He is apparently cooperating very heavily with Mueller. But let's talk a little bit about this, like all of this, like the broader, the scheme. What was Flynn trying to do with Turkey?
Oh, this is just so good. Michael Flynn, Trump's national security advisor, and his attorneys walked into Washington, D.C. court today, assuming, and I got to give him props, and I'm going to name him, Judge Emmett Sullivan would give him no jail time. And Donald Trump, remember, tweeted earlier today, good luck. Didn't go according to plan, Rabia. At the sentencing hearing, or which was earlier today, I have to quote Judge Emmett Sullivan because he was savage as F. He literally told Michael Flynn, quote, all along, you were an unregistered agent of a foreign country while serving as a national security advisor. Mm-hmm. Arguably, that undermines everything that this flag over here stands for. Arguably, you sold your country out. And it bears mentioning that Judge Emmett Sullivan is a black man. I just think karma is beautiful. And also, he was praised earlier on Fox News. They thought that, you know, that he's going to go easy on them, give them no jail time. And also, Michael Flynn said that he was entrapped. Remember that? But guess what? Earlier this week, he said, I was entrapped by the FBI. Well, so much for the deep state, because he admitted to willfully lying to the FBI, specifically about two things. Number one, when it comes to Turkey, Michael Flynn and his associates were paid $530,000 by essentially the Turkish government to kidnap and extradite Fethullah Gulen from Pennsylvania and bring him over to Turkey. Now, for your
audience, by the way, that's not really how an extradition works. This was a straight up kidnapping.
It's literally straight up kidnapping. It's remarkable. He got $530,000 for that. Also, don't forget that he got several thousand dollars from Russia to appear at the Russia TV gala in Russia, where he sat next to Vladimir Putin. It'd be fine if he was to register and, you know, openly say that, but he didn't register. And he was also, during this time, the national security advisor. And let's not forget, this guy's so stupid. He's such an idiot that he wrote an op-ed article for The Hill newspaper on election day attacking Fethullah Gulen, the same cleric that Erdogan wants desperately, and we'll explain why in a second, whom the Turkish government has accused of helping instigate a coup. So literally, that's what kind of tipped off investigators. They're like, huh. Why is Michael Flynn, who is close to Donald Trump, writing an op-ed in the Hill newspaper, which literally is word for word Turkish propaganda? This is strange. Let's go investigate the Flynn Intel Group. Oh, look, it got 530,000 straight up kidnap Fethullah Gulen. And to make matters worse, his former two associates were also indicted as part of a conspiracy to violate federal lobbying rules. And one of them was charged with making a false statement to FBI. In addition to Michael Flynn's crimes, he also made false statements about conversations he had with Russia. Then Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak, apparently that's how you pronounce his name properly. He told the FBI agents that he did not seek to influence the Russian vote on the United Nations Security Council resolution about Israel settlements. That was a lie. And he also said he did not talk to Russia about waiting to retaliate for U.S. expulsion of Russian diplomats, because if you remember, President Obama, before he left, actually did retaliate against Russia for its meddling and Michael Flynn had this phone call with Sergey Kislyak, where apparently it was discussed, hey, hey, why don't you wait? Because we're going to get in. And then once we get in, you know, we can do business together. That's pretty serious, right? And at that time, yeah. President Obama was still president. We still didn't have the inauguration. And I want to just mention this, is that President Obama, a Democrat, warned incoming President Trump about two things. He said, take North Korea seriously. And he said, be wary of Michael Flynn. Also, Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, who was appointed by President Obama, warned the White House three times that Michael Flynn, as a result of this conversation with the Russian ambassador, was potentially compromised because he lied to Mike Pence, and Mike Pence then repeated that lie in national television. You guys remember that? So he said, this man is compromised. Russia can potentially blackmail him.
I kind of feel like that was so naive because, I mean, like, isn't it clear that Trump was probably like, yeah, dude, that's a perk, not a bug. I mean, like, that's why we want him.
but that's what I'm saying is Donald Trump, see, the Donald Trump ignored it. It wasn't until the Washington Post broke the story. And then a few days after the Post broke the story, then finally, either, I don't know, he resigned or fired. We still don't know. And then even after that, Donald Trump went to James Comey and said, can you go easy on Flynn?
Which takes us to the next investigation, because we got 10 minutes. I want to move on to the Comey thing for sure. But the obstruction of justice investigation is also a separate investigation.
We haven't even talked about obstruction of justice. Awesome.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. So remember, the Mueller's appointment came after Trump decided to fire Comey, and there was fear that this was like him trying to, I mean, not even a fear, it was so clear. I mean, but apparently recent court documents show that Mueller is looking to assemble a broader obstruction case against Trump, one that could even argue that his public statements intentionally misled the public to limit the scope of the Russian investigation. I mean, I think half the stuff he tweets is obstruction in its own way. But it could be that this is not something that's going to be decided in court, but he could actually pass this investigative material to Congress for consideration of impeachment. But that takes us to Comey. We've heard from Comey in this past week. What happened there?
Oh yeah, Comey. Like, I always kind of joke that Comey is the herpes of America. Like, everything, every time we have him under control, he just flares back up. And yeah, like my Christmas wish, even though I don't celebrate Christmas, is like, let's just talk less about Comey, for better or worse.
Him and Avenatti. Can we do that for Avenatti too?
Yeah, but the thing with Comey is he's like good and bad, right? Because so Comey finishes two completely unnecessary six-hour interviews that were, again, brought on by the Republican-led Congressional Investigation Committee. They're thankfully going to be outgoing soon. And of course, they talked about FBI's conduct during the 2016 investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. And of course, about Russia. But this is why I think Comey just gives zero Fs now, because he came out and I actually want to read his quote. He said, people who know better, including Republican members of this body, have to have the courage to stand up and speak the truth, not to be cowed by mean tweets or fear of their base. There is truth, and they're not telling it. Their silence is shameful. The FBI's reputation has taken a big hit because of the president of the United States has lied about it constantly. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the Aunt Lydia of America, tweeted a blistering critique of Comey and his attacks on the FBI and accused him of just so rich.
You mean his attack on the Republican Party?
Yeah, she accused Comey of, quote, tremendous corruption. I just think it's so beautiful. Mwah. Tremendous corruption. But Comey did say this, and I appreciate him saying it. He asked basically Republicans to stand up to Trump, and he was also kind of compared Trump to a mafioso. And he said this is the same president who calls his former attorney, quote, a rat. For cooperating with the special investigation. He kind of is asking the Republicans to come up with a spine and remember that they were the party of law and order and national security and put the country above their party. And he's kind of like, I think, getting increasingly pissed off that, you know, here we are while all these investigations are dropping and they've brought him in for like 12 hours worth of questioning about, you know, mostly about the emails and about his role in Russia. But with Flynn specifically today, you know, his own admission that he willfully lied, the judge's blistering statements, the Republicans trying their hardest to try to taint the Flynn indictment, that kind of failed.
Well, speaking of rats and Trump's attorneys, you see what Giuliani's up to, how he's defending the president in the last couple of days? He's gone from like there was no crime
to what he did is not a crime, to so what if it's a crime? I mean, like, I don't even understand. Like, no, the complete unraveling of Giuliani is astonishing to me.
Or also Dershowitz. Dershowitz, right. You know, who's distinguished chair at Harvard Law School, said lying to the FBI is not a crime. And I'm like, wait,
also,
what?
Also a child molester, apparently, according to some new court filings. Well, Dershowitz,
Epstein,
but anyway.
That, I'm so glad that I believe it was Miami Herald. For the listeners, I hope you guys can spend time and read about that case. It's an
horrific.
Amazing. And it's horrific. And they're living survivors, young women who were part of this.
A 16-year-old who said that Alan Dershowitz, I mean, like, she was basically offered up to him. But sorry, back to Giuliani.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's when there's so many villains, you get them confused sometimes. I think with Giuliani is just like, you're sitting here thinking like, why are you voluntarily throwing yourself and your legacy and your name under the bus for Donald Trump? Like, this is a sinking ship, bro. Get off the ship. But nope, he's tripling down. And Giuliani was also the one who said the truth isn't truth. Remember that? That was recent.
Right.
Also. I don't know, really. I think Giuliani might be pride. It might be a game to him. It might be because he thinks he could profit off it. I don't know. I don't think it's due to
loyalty. Does he want to be attorney general? Wait. We don't have an attorney general right now, do we? I'm so confused.
We have a nominee.
We have the acting guy. We have that guy acting, but we don't have
Whitaker. Yeah. But I don't think, maybe he wants to be attorney general, but who wants to be attorney general right now? I think, like, anyone who wants to be the attorney general is a fool, which is like, it's like auditioning for his chief of staff job, which used to be like one of the hottest tickets in Washington, D.C., and nobody wants to touch it. Nicholas Ayers, this guy who's 36-year-old multimillionaire, chief of staff for Pence, is like, I'd rather take my chances elsewhere and save my name.
Look, first of all, most of the people connected to this guy probably have some kind of corruption or criminality in their past. So they know the minute they step into these roles, it's just going to get unpacked. But I saw that you noted in the script that so far, Trump University and Trump Foundation have been shut down due to illegal activity. And the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, the Trump inauguration, the Trump administration, the Trump organization. These are the entities, these are the institutions, the organizations that are under active criminal investigation. And one of the things I have to wonder, you know, is this. A lot of these investigations have to do with criminal acts that have been ongoing for not years, but decades. Why did it take this long? The Trump Foundation stuff, the university stuff, the tax stuff. Why did it take this long to take this guy down? I feel like he should have been on the radar of attorney generals across the country, anywhere he operated, that something is real shady here.
But I mean, it's a very astute observation and a good question, but it just shows you how rich people get away with it. And look at Bernie Madoff, like, just openly, just gamed the system. And, you know, because he had money, influence, power, people kind of trusted him. It was a good old boys network. And, you know, when it comes to white collar crime, that if you really think about it on a macro level, does so much damage to millions of Americans, right? Like, these men and women, based on the 2008 recession, even, you just saw how that unfettered greed caused the worst recession since the Great Depression. And Donald Trump, right? Like, that's why I don't think he wanted to become president. He just wanted to game the presidency to essentially help his brand name. He wasn't expecting to win. And for those of you who think that he expected to win, go back and look at his acceptance speech. It was done in like a... He was shocked. It was done in a dumpy hotel. There wasn't all that gold and glitz. Like, nobody was expecting him to win. I was in New York at that time. I was covering it for the Huffington Post. I was at Javits Center, and the Democrats at like 9:30 p.m. started getting drunk out of depression. And then we went to Times Square. But nobody was expecting him to win. And I think, you know, he realized, oh, my God, when you're president of the United States, every tweet, every word, every statement is scrutinized because you're the commander in chief of the most powerful nation on earth. And guess what? Your finances, your organizations, your foundations will be scrutinized. And in a strange way, this could be like a good old morality tale for children in the future. Don't be a criminal. Don't get your children involved in criminality. And C, you know, maybe don't covet power, because you might get to the top of the world, but then you'll see everything crumble around you because your history of lies and deceit will catch up to you. And I think that's what's happening to Trump. And
my theory about Melania's new blonde hair is that she's about to enter the witness protection program. I'm seeing all this shit come down around her.
She changes her accent. It's like, hi, I'm Melania. But you know,
suddenly has a southern accent.
You mentioned this twice before. I do think Don Jr., Ivanka, and Jared Kushner should be very worried. Because Jared Kushner, when it comes to the opaque financial trail, his own omissions or misleading statements, Ivanka, because of her very active role in these Trump organizations. And also, let's not forget that the Trump organization CFO has been granted immunity, which means he's singing to the prosecutors. And then finally, Don Jr., when it comes to obstruction of justice, we still haven't talked about the Trump Tower meeting yet.
Well, here's the thing. To me, this all adds up to happy holidays for democracy in America. If all this goes down, we're not going to be here next week. So we hope all of our listeners have a wonderful and safe and joyous holidays. We'll be back in the new year. Wajahat, thank you for joining us this week. And remind our listeners where they can find you online, unbanned, unlike me.
At Kumail on Twitter. send me all hate mail at Kumail or at Hasan Minhaj.
All right,
you want to send some nice comments, send it at Wajahat.
Okay, sounds good. And Hassan's one guy who just won't even respond to me, so I'll find him in the new year. Anyway, thanks so much. I appreciate it, you guys. Have a wonderful holiday season and Happy New Year. See you in 2019.
Happy New Year.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.